Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Isn't this fabulous? I'm joined by fellow podcaster. She's already got the giggles. It's Ruth Corden. How are
Hey!
You?
Hey, I'm really well, mate. How are you?
I'm so good and so happy to be speaking to you because we met for the first time not a fortnight ago. And it was a magical meeting, was it not?
Oh, it was so nice. I didn't know that you were still around. I'd have come and found you earlier in the night because obviously you were working with Caroline. I didn't know whether you'd gone. And then I was just going and I saw you and I was like, oh my God, I'd have hung out with you all night if I'd have known you were around.
It was slumped.
So nice to finally meet you.
I was slumped on a sofa eating a club sandwich and drinking full fat Coke. It was that kind of evening.
Yeah, you must have been knackered. You must have been so tired.
It was that wonderful blend. Listeners, we're talking about, I was working with Caroline Hirons at her Hall of Fame pop-up, and it was that blissful combination of wired and tired.
Yes, so nice. Quite a nice place to be, though, isn't it?
Yeah. There are worse places, but you're going to take us to some good places because you, my friend, are sharing your feel-good habits, and I have no doubt they are going to be absolute corkers. So where are we starting?
So my first feel-good habit would be people, like the people that I put around myself. And there are people that you meet, aren't there? And I would say, Emma, this is I probably feel this about you, where you just go, actually, you could become one of my people. And I know that in spaces in my life that have been difficult and I've needed to feel good, whether that's because, you know, I haven't had the day that I wanted at work and it's been a bit rubbish and I can pick up the phone to somebody that can make me feel good, right the way through to, God, for people that don't know, we've been trying to have a baby for 9 years, right the way through to I've looked at a pregnancy test and it's negative for the however many times this year, like those really stark stuff that's really, really difficult. Can I swear on this podcast?
Of course you can.
Okay. Stuff that's really shit right the way through to I've had a bit of a crappy day. So for me, my number one feel-good habit is definitely people, but the right people, not just being in a room of people for the sake of it. The right people. And that's been something I've been really kind of boundaries within my life, actually carving out those people that are my people. And I have lots of people that I know, but I have a few close people that I'm like, you make me feel good when I need you to. So the first one would be people, for sure. They're like, people make me feel really good. I love it.
Talk to me about boundaries, because I think that's really important. And I'm saying that because I have definitely for a lot of my life been attracted to, I will go up to someone and say, you think they're my people, but they actually are not.
Yeah.
So how do you, because I think you can, it's that thing, isn't it? Like, I really like pizza, but I know I shouldn't eat it all the time. But that's how I am with people.
Yeah.
Sometimes I like go for that kind of thing. I haven't explained
so
that
I
well.
Think for me, it's about, I suppose my sort of infertility journey has been the place that I've carved that out a lot. And you could put anything in there, whether that's that you've been, I don't know, struggling with maybe addiction or something significant in your life where you start to realise the people that get you and are there for you. So it's sort of that classic Marilyn Monroe quote, isn't it? If you can't handle me at my worst, you don't deserve me at my best.
Mm.
And so I think for me, deep-rooted friendship is about meeting each other's needs, caring deeply for each other, whatever I bring to you in this space, it annoys me when people say I'll never judge you. That's bollocks. That is absolute bull. We all judge people all the time. Mm-hmm. We make snap judgments on the colour of their hair, how much they weigh, the colour of their skin, what they do for a living. Like we anybody that thinks we are empty vessels is lying. So I don't necessarily want friends that are going to be like, I'm never going to judge you. I want friends that are going to take what I give them, hold it with deep respect, acknowledge the pain that is in it, acknowledge the places that they can't, acknowledge that they can't fix me. I don't want people that are going to be like, it's okay, I'm going to make this better. Unless you can give me a baby, you actually can't make it better. So, good luck trying. So for me, it's about people who, boundaries for me are about saying, does this person meet my needs? And I don't even think friendship and relationships for me are about do they make me happy, because I think happiness is something we ultimately have to find in ourselves. And I think if I rely on anyone else to fulfill me and make me happy, I've lost the plot a bit. I think for me it's about, can you hold my stuff? Can I really laugh with you? Can I really cry with you? Can we have light and shade in this space? And I do a podcast with my sister, and that if I look at Ange, that is the person that gives me that stuff. And I know that even if we weren't sisters, she would be one of my friends, because there is that, it's safety, isn't it? It's security, safety, understanding, commitment, building bridges halfway, equal, not one of you just, and I think true friendship is magical, actually. And I have stripped away people in my life where I've gone, actually, this isn't good for my heart. I'm not guarding my heart by being friends with you. I need to step away from this friendship, and I need to, look for other friendships that are going to fulfil and sustain me. So I'd say that's it for me, really.
That's a lovely one. And I also think you just said something there about when you had to step away from friendships. I had a conversation with Julia Samuel on this podcast about when friendships end, and about how they can be as heartbreaking as divorce, female friendships especially, that tend to be quite emotionally deep-rooted. Mm. And when I started canvassing friends' opinions, many, many of them said, yeah, I have people who I've fallen out with and it broke my heart. And if I bumped into them, it would be horrendous. Mm. But I know that the end of that friendship was a good thing. But it does, not to pry too much, but do any of yours, even though you stepped away with good reason, did you ever feel a little bit of shame or embarrassed about the fact that it hadn't worked?
I think friendships can feel like a breakup when they don't work. I really do. I really feel like it does feel like a breakup. I've got one specific friend, and there was never really any closure. We never really had the conversation about how we'd hurt each other or not been able to kind of be what each other needed. And it just, communication just sort of stopped.
Mm.
And then, really sadly, her dad died, and I kind of got back in touch with her, and I sent her some flowers, and she never even acknowledged that I'd done that. And I think if I was to bump into her, I'd burst into tears. It felt very deep rooted. I've known her for years and years, since secondary school, and I sort of thought she was a friend that I could go through anything with, and we'd never get to that stage. And I know if I was to ever see her, it would be really, really painful for me. It would be deeply scarring. And that isn't because she didn't acknowledge, her dad had died. I totally understand she wasn't going to. But it's the sort of unknown. It's the no closure. Endings to me are really important. Mm-hmm. That, I think that they are vital. So it was the sort of, I haven't had an ending in this. I don't know what you're thinking. We've never thrashed this out. I'd rather have had a massive fight with her. I'd rather have had a huge argument with her and gone, I can't do this anymore, and slam the phone down or whatever. This like limbo, and I honestly don't know how I would feel if I saw her. And I do feel heartbroken that she isn't in my life anymore. I really genuinely do. But some things are for a season, and those seasons can be really long, but some things are just for a season. And I think the more that we make peace with that, the better we can cope with grief and loss when we go, maybe that person wasn't meant for me for the whole of my life. It was meant for this season. And I think that is that comes with growing and learning and developing, I suppose.
I had a friend say to me a little while ago, I had some friendships end, and she said, friendships are for a reason, a season, or a lifetime.
Mm.
And if you can embrace that, then it makes as you say, make it less painful. But then let's move on, because we could do a whole episode about friendships, which maybe we'll do another time. But people's a great one. I think you're absolutely right. And I think with lockdown, I think a lot of people really felt the absence of the energy of their good friends, which has meant, you know, obviously we've all really loved being around people again. So where are we going for feel good habit number two?
So feel good habit number two is like music, dancing. Like, actually, I was just on the way. I've been out doing some work this morning, and on the way home, I put on the musical Six. That is probably up there with my favourite feel good habit. Like, I just love all the music. I love all the different girls. So for people that don't know, it's about Henry VIII's six wives, and they've created like multi award winning touring show. It's on Broadway. It's in London. It's also touring. It is like the best girl group you'll ever watch. They've all got amazing voices. They can all dance, and they all take one of his wives and they tell the story of how it's just so. And the final song that they sing is so good. It's so uplifting. And I know that I can dance around stupidly in my house. I can put music on. And I think music is, you know, it's so emotive, isn't it? It can take you back to the happiest memories and also some of the darkest memories. You know, I don't know if anybody knows the song You Could Be Happy by Snow Patrol, but it's like the best, worst breakup song you'll ever listen to. If you've never listened to it, go and listen.
What's it called? I'm gonna write it down.
It's called You Could Be Happy. And honestly, I can't listen. But there's something so beautiful in the way that Gary Lightbody has written that song and incorporated and encompassed actually what breakups feel like. There's also something that makes me feel quite good in that, because I think what music does for me is it makes me go, God, I'm not on my own. Like, Gary Lightbody's obviously been through something really tough with a partner, and it's ended horrendously, and he's penned this song as a result of it. So actually there's something really comforting, even though that even in those songs that are more sad or emotive. So music, dancing, my God, that is definitely, definitely one for me. If I'm not having a great morning, or I've woken up and got out of bed on the wrong side, if I put some music on and I just dance and sing, and you know, it really can lift my mood.
Do you get obsessed with songs? Because so the other day I just got obsessed with Hair by Little Mix.
Oh, great song. What a song.
So just in the morning when I go, I have my shot of espresso, listen to that once on the ear pods, and then I'll work out, or I'll do whatever.
I'm pleased
I'm
it was a shot of espresso. I was waiting for like, I wake up in the morning, shot of tequila or
I was the one who had to stop my conversation because of the chanting of shot, shot, shot the other night, not the other way around, my friend.
Amazing. What a great comeback. So I definitely think music, and I get obsessed with songs. Like, people say to me, you're really weird, you know loads of lyrics to loads of different songs, and it's because I listen to them and listen to them. Because if I don't know all the lyrics, especially if there's a rap in it, if I don't know that rap, like word by word, like heart, like off by heart, I lose it with myself. So I absolutely find, like, I get annoyed if I don't know the rap.
That's made me absolutely cry with laughter, because I was listening to Intergalactic by the Beastie Boys the other day, and I was like,
"Yeah,
my rap really is, I need to revise this." And I was like reading the lyrics, and I was rapping it properly. There's a weird insight into...
But you know, that makes me feel good. If I can get a rap down and I can do it really well, and then I'm like in a space with people and I perform it, they go, oh God, I'm like, yeah, I mean, that would probably be one of my feel-good habits. Yeah. Yes, those hours I spent listening to Stormzy on repeat, it was worth it for this moment.
For this moment, when I've shown you that at my core, I'm a rapper.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. At my core, I am a rapper.
Yeah, I like that one very much. Music's incredible, and it's definitely like I do lots of different types of podcasts. So the other day, I was doing a podcast with a woman who went on a search for God. And so it was really quite deep, interesting conversation. I was like, I need something. So I was like, what can I listen to? It was probably Taylor Swift, because the Red album is due out tomorrow, the revised one.
Oh, of course. Version. Yeah, of course. Exciting.
Yeah. So I'll be revising All Too Well later.
Yeah. We all know whatever's going to be up to later on tonight.
Literally. And there's no secret. I think everyone who knows me is like, she's going to be re-listening to Red. Okay.
Amazing.
Habit number three.
So this is really different to habit number one, but one of, and this is probably quite a weird one, but one of my feel-good habits would be solitude.
Yes. Yes, my friend.
So I think we have become so made to just throw ourselves into everything. And I think with things like WhatsApp with blue ticks, it's like, you know, things like Instagram when you've seen a message, it's like this, that is a condition to respond immediately. Mm-hmm. Well, you've read it and you haven't replied. Like this whole thing about like group chats. Well, she replied to the group chat before she replied to me personally. It's like, God, our whole life now is conditioned to be like there. Whenever anyone needs us, whenever anyone asks for us, you know, all our emails on our phones, like. And actually, solitude for me isn't just about not being with people. It's about not being with anything. Mm-hmm. And it's about being with myself. And that is something that is vitally important to me. Whether that's I stay in bed longer on a Saturday morning and I don't pick up my phone and I read a book and I think, I've woken up at 8, but I'm not getting up till 11. Mm-hmm. Whether that's I'm actually really thinking I would love to go away on my own for a couple of days in the next, you know, probably before Christmas. I'd love to find somewhere, go by myself. I'd take my phone because I'd like to be contactable, but I'd be very clear with people. You do not ring me or get in touch with me unless it's an emergency. And I think carving solitude for ourselves is so against what the world tells us we need to do and is so against what the world tells us will make us happy. I really believe that in this season for me, which has been often really dark, like the last 9 years of in terms of my own mental health and grieving the baby I don't have. And I think all of that, like being diagnosed with conditions that took ages, all of that stuff, actually sometimes it's in the stillness that I have found the most comfort and I've felt the most good about myself. And it's only when we stop, I think it's only when we really stop that the grief that we carry, we can really manage it and deal with it. And it's only when we stop. And lament is such an old word, isn't it? It's almost quite biblical in a way. But I think lamenting is so important. I think we're so often really quick to get over the grief, count our blessings, move on to the sunshine. It's okay. Lots of people have got it much worse than me. But actually, for me, there has been something really positive and feel good about owning this grief and this pain and saying I've got to work through it if I'm going to manage it and carry it properly. So solitude would be a really big feel-good habit for me. Goes completely against the world and what the world would tell us we need, but is a big one for me.
No, I agree. And I was funnily chatting to the woman I was just talking about, the one who went on the search for God. We were talking about meditation and about where does one's self start, like if you want to believe in something greater, like first of all you've got to kind of understand who you are. And I guess we grew up in that generation, a bit older than you, significantly older than you, but never mind. But if
I don't reckon you are, how old are you?
43.
I'll be 40 in May.
Oh, I just assumed you were like early 30s.
No, I will, lots of people do, but I will be 40 in May.
The best is yet to come. Okay, well,
yet to come.
Okay, so then we did grow up in a similar time where it's kind of we grew up with computers and we were that real generation who kind of had all of those things. And I remember when I had a depressive episode, realizing that it was because one of the big things is I didn't know how to be on my own, and I was on my own for the first time. Whenever I had been on my own, I had immediately gone to be around people, whether they were the right people or not. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's about, would you say active solitude, like actually being alone, but like thinking about what you want. I think it takes a long time for us to feel comfortable to say to ourselves, what do I want? What makes me happy? Because I think we're so tuned to please other people.
Absolutely. And I think as well, silence is so powerful, both in conversation but also with yourself. Like, you know, it's such a skill to use silence well. But, you know, I know that when I have found the darkest times of my life, retreating healthily has been really good for me. And I say healthily because I think being withdrawn and solitude are two very different things. And I think somebody can be withdrawn and we should worry about that. And when they're withdrawing from themselves and the emotional connection they have with others, actively seeking solitude and thinking about what do I need? What are my needs? How do I meet them within myself? Is completely different. And I think people get frightened when somebody's perhaps saying, I just want to be on my own, or I need to take some time out, or I need some space. Everybody goes, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I think we need to separate being withdrawn away from choosing to take peace and quiet and space to manage and feel our emotions. I think we're really frightened of feeling the bad stuff. I do really think that as humans, I think we're really frightened of feeling the difficult, painful stuff. And I don't think we should shy away from that. I think the people that I love the most in my life have done that work on themselves and have said, what causes me great joy and what causes me great pain? And understanding that those two things can collide and exist in the same space is also really, really important. So, and it's only through solitude and quietness and stillness that I've done that for myself. So that is definitely a feel-good habit for me, solitude.
It's really powerful. And I was chatting to my brother the other day. He'd read this article about how our dopamine is affecting us. So because of social media, especially in phones and all of these things, we get these dopamine hits. But it now takes a lot more dopamine for us to get that kind of basic dopamine response. Whereas at the other end of it, it takes much less of a lack of it for us to go into a depressive state. I would hate to be under 20 right now with all of it. I mean, I really, when I read about that, it really upsets me. But that idea that we're being conditioned, kind of the natural drug that we have is being exploited in some way by what we use on a daily basis is really worrying.
It's awful, isn't it? It is. And I think, it's so hard, isn't it, to manage all of that stuff. I find it hard enough at nearly 40. I can't imagine having this thing in the palm of my hand that gives me all the connection and power to the whole world and not really knowing how to manage it. You know, it's sort of like, I liken social media to sugar. Do you remember when it came out that fat wasn't the enemy, sugar was? And it was like, and we're all like, we can't stop consuming it because it tastes so good and it gives... And actually, social media is exactly the same. I think what we have to do with young people in that we know, or, you know, I think about this with my nieces and nephews, it's about being nutritionalists in their lives and saying, how do you manage this? You know, some people say I'm cutting out sugar forever, but lots of other people say I'm going to manage it better than I ever have. And I think that's the same with social media. Like, there's so much positive that can come from it, but we've got to help young people to navigate and be sensible and have good nutrition around the way that they use their social media. Because I don't think saying you're not having it and I'm taking it away from you is the answer, really. But yeah, I definitely think with the rise of, you can just talk to anyone whenever you want, can't you? Somebody can have access to you whenever they want, however they want. They can come into your space, they can say whatever they want about you. And I think carving out times where you actively seek to be away from that is so healthy and so important.
I agree with you. Good point, well made, my friend.
Thanks.
Feel good habit number four.
Therapy.
Yeah.
That has been my absolute saviour. Talking therapies. I think the way that therapy has been life-giving for me is, I can't really put it into words, in all honesty. Like, the way that it has changed my dynamic, the way that I think, the space that I give myself. We're sort of conditioned to not really talk about ourselves, aren't we? We got it, you know, that whole notion of, oh, she loves herself, it's become such.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A negative connotation, like it's like arrogance, and it's like, actually, do you know what, it's all right if you do love yourself. That's actually quite a healthy thing to do. And it's only through having space where I just talk about me and I say, this is what's going on and this is how it's affecting me, that I've been able to grow in accepting and you know, thinking positively about who I am and the, what I bring to the world. And it's therapy that's done that, giving me an hour a week to go, we don't have to talk about anybody else if you don't want to, other than yourself, or people that have impacted your sense of self, or people that have made you feel good or not so good. That's all that this space is about, has absolutely changed my life. Mm-hmm. I can't say how much it has helped and formulated me and maybe probably a better person, I think. So definitely some kind of talking therapy. I've been having therapy since I, on and off, not consistently, but probably for the last 12 years. And I don't think I could ever not have a therapist that knows me, that I've been in a space with, that I can pick up with when I need to. So I had a really interesting therapy last year called EMDR.
Is that the blinking one?
Where you tap. Yeah, so you there's a sound and you tap yourself. And it's all based around repetitive eye movement. So you close your eyes and you bring up a historic, perhaps traumatic, painful memory, and you go back to the memory, and your therapist helps you to... it's used a lot for people who are like, maybe have been in like really horrendous car accidents and things like that, because the amygdala can't stop ringing. I'm getting quite technical now, so I'll shut up. But in terms of anxiety inducing things, EMDR can help you to be less anxious. Definitely changed my life. I haven't seen my therapist for a year, and I got back in touch with her a couple of weeks ago and said, I think I need to step back into this space. There's some stuff happening for me personally, and I think I need, and she was like, and it's really important that I have somebody who I can check back in with and pick up stuff with. It's not just about just finding a therapist for me. It's about having somebody that I, you know, can go to if I need to. So, yeah.
Just knowing that they're at the other end of an email or a phone call, and that an appointment will not be far away. I agree with you. And actually, I had the holistic psychologist on the podcast recently, and I read her book, How to Do the Work. And I think for all of those people who think that needing therapy means that there's something that you're not doing properly, or see it as a sign of weakness, it's a really good book to read, because actually what you realize is we build our own essentially Instagram filters, and it's to protect us. So we have all so of these good patterns that are of behavior that actually might be binding us. They might have served us when we were younger or when we were in different situations, but as we evolve and grow, they actually hold one back. And this book basically just gives you a few little key tools to help you see the patterns. And then obviously it's like, you can go and see a therapist, or you can read this further reading. I think it's a brilliant book.
Yeah, it's really interesting. That whole thing about Instagram filters is really interesting. I think, it's coping survival. It's coping mechanisms, isn't it? And I have picked up along the way some really, really difficult, weird, not helpful coping mechanisms that I have needed to tear down and not use or not go to. And I think we don't ever stop going to them. There's times in my life where I've gone, God, I'm doing that again, and I thought I'd managed and dealt with that. But I think it's just about saying that specific moment was probably really stressful, Ruth, and so you reverted back to your old ways of managing and coping. I would honestly urge, like, one of the things I love about the States is how open they are about this stuff. You come in for drinks and I'm seeing my therapist, and everybody just goes, oh, right, okay. Yeah. You know, there's none of this, like, I've got to think of an excuse because heaven forbid somebody should think I'm talking about my issues. And, you know, we sort of follow it up with, I've started therapy, I'm okay. Like, just a couple of things in my life. It's like, dude, it's fine. It's okay not to be okay. If you're not okay and you're unraveling and you're finding this really tough, it's fine. You can just say, I needed some therapy. No probs.
You know what? I found myself being really uncompassionate recently. And it took me by surprise, because essentially I have a lot of friends who are in the position where they employ people. And I've been hearing from a few of them how people of a certain age were calling in, like, literally on the morning saying, I'm going to need to take a personal day or a mental health day. And there's me thing. And I remember saying to a couple of them, my goodness, wow, God, is it? And actually thinking quite poorly of the people calling in saying that, because I thought, God, I definitely went through really difficult times when I was in work. And I didn't ever think that was an option. I never had that luxury. Yeah. I just got on with it.
Yeah.
And then I was talking to this amazing psychologist called Dr. Ramani, and she said, but that's a good thing, because think about all the things that you've pent up, all the stuff that you've swallowed down. Maybe if you'd taken a few personal days back in the day, I mean, I thought the jeopardy there was that I would lose my job, or that I would be treated differently in my job before doing it. But actually, there's me. I realized, and I had to check myself. And now I actually think it's a really good thing the younger generation are doing that, even though they are getting called snowflakes. And like,
but I also think there's a big hustle generation with that generation, isn't it? And I think it's a really interesting mix of some people. I think, you know, the generation above us are very like, well, you just get on with it. Like, there's, we're like in this weird middle, like, oh, they're saying it's okay to feel like this, but they're saying it's not. God, my parents are saying, well, we felt like that and we just got on with it. And they're saying, well, I feel like this and I need to stop. But I also think what's coming up underneath that, I've got a couple of friends who are much younger than me, who this hustle culture of like, you don't want to be lazy, you're always pushing for the next thing, you always want the next success, you've got so much to offer the world that if you dare stop and slow down, you're not going to give the world what they deserve. You absolutely can't stop. I've got a really good friend who we had a really interesting conversation just a few weeks ago, actually, where he was saying, this hustle culture is really getting to me because I am not able to stop or rest or... And I think... it's balance, isn't it? That is the thing. My dad always says life is balance. Everything. Too much of anything is really bad for you. If we get too down the route of I'm never going to stop, it will lead to burnout. If we get too down the route of all I'm going to do is stop, it will lead to economies and the world grinding to a halt. So we've got to somehow try and bring these two things together. And I think that is back to knowing yourself, finding solitude, having your people around you, getting some therapy. Like, that's the only way that we really get to know the inner workings of ourselves. And so it's that evolving and growing, and I, you know, constantly ask yourself, what do I need? What do I need from this situation? What do I need from my job? What do I need from my partner? What do I need from my friends? What do I need from my downtime? What do I need from my like, having that, what do I need, I think is such an important question to continue to ask ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. And also I sometimes shout at myself Ryan Gosling style, like, what do you want? If I've got one of those days where I'm feeling, you know, in The Notebook when he's like, what do you want? What do you want? I'll do that to myself sometimes. My neighbours must think I'm mental. But I do, because sometimes I'm just sort of not doing anything. And I'm like, what do you want? Because there is something, just figure it out and like move forward.
Yeah.
Can be quite harsh on myself sometimes in the privacy of my own.
Sounds like it. Does sound like it. Oh, do you know what? I think that is a really interesting point, though. One of my therapies, like the therapy I had last year, like parenting ourselves, nurturing ourselves, like treat people with kindness is such a great hashtag. But actually, what about treating ourselves with kindness? Like talking to ourselves the way that we would to a friend. If we if we're going through something difficult, I'd never say to a mate, oh God, stop crying, pull yourself together. This is ridiculous now. Like, what are you still slumped in bed for, crying about this thing? That's the way we talk to ourselves an awful lot. And I think this notion of being kind to ourselves, parenting ourselves, is such an interesting topic. How do we continue to nurture? Little Ruth hasn't gone anywhere. Five-year-old Ruth hasn't gone anywhere. She's still in there. She still needs nurture. She still needs parenting. I still need to speak kindly to myself. And I think we are so hard on ourselves often internally, and we'd never dream of saying it out loud to somebody else if they brought us their issues or what they're struggling with. We'd never dream of being that hard with them, yet we so naturally do it in our own head. It's awful, really.
Oh yeah, that is a whole other podcast. Let's do that one, because that's really interesting. But we are hurtling towards the fifth and final.
It's really simple. It's laughter.
And you have a like, great laugh.
It's a joy. Like, I suppose it would be laughter teamed with the podcast I do with my sister, because that is such a space where, like, the joy I get from laughing with people, like, just that silly, like, you know, when you can't stop laughing and you then start trying to have a conversation and you're still laughing about the thing that you were laughing about 2 minutes, like, just that euphoric, heady space of, like, God, I feel so happy in this moment. We have been really raised, as I've got a brother and a sister, and all three of us have been raised to, you know, look for the joy and the colour in the world, not in a like you know, toxic positivity, you know, everything happens for a reason way, but in a, like a deep, there's joy to be found if you look for it sort of way. And I'm so grateful for that mantra, because laughter is the best medicine for me sometimes. If I phone Ange, my sister, and I'm like, I'm having a bit of a shit day, she'll obviously listen, she'll empathise. And then before I know it, we're just cracking up about something. And I'm like, oh God, actually, today's been all right. So my, probably the reason it's at the end is because it's for the one for me that is most prevalent. Like, I feel the best when I am just cracking up. I think the bonding as well, the attachment that happens when you laugh with people and you find people that have got the same humour as you. God, I just love it so much. It makes me feel the best about myself.
I 100% agree. There's something really vulnerable about laughing as well, about something, because you're showing so much about yourself and you're showing what you find funny.
Yeah. And I think there's something like, you know, when you find somebody who really makes you laugh, and you also, like, I love making people laugh. It's probably the thing that massages my ego the most. If I think something's funny, I'll say it. Like, if I think it's going to get a laugh, I'll share the story. I'll say the funny thing, because there's something in me that I'm like, God, I've made you laugh. That makes me feel good. But when somebody makes me laugh, really properly belly laugh, like crack up, I feel so connected to them. I feel so, like, deeply, like, yeah, it feels like such a special space that I just know that I could never cope now without real, true laughter. And then it's that, you know, in those relationships that you have, it's those jokes that then become, you know, me and my sister have got so many, oh God, do you remember? And then we just start cracking up about it all over again. It is absolutely my favourite thing to do over and above anything else, is to laugh with people. I love it.
Totally. One of my friends, Terry, he is the worst, but he's one of the funniest people I've ever met in my time. Like, even just talking about him. And like, even like, we, around the time of the Meghan Prince Harry sit down with Oprah, we were talking about something on text that was so superficial and silly. And he just wrote back, if this doesn't work out, I'm going to do a 2-hour sit down with Oprah. And then he just has this ability to take
so good
these things and make them ridiculous. And he makes me howl with laughter.
Yeah, I love that. And those people in your life that do that, God, it is so special. It's the thing that makes me feel the best about myself. Laughing with myself, laughing with other people, laughing, you know, poking fun at myself, not in a horrible, like, unkind way, but just knowing when I'm being a bit of a dick and owning it and going, oh, yeah, that's quite funny because I was a bit stupid in that moment. Like, all of those different layers of laughter, that for me is like the most feel good thing for me is laughing.
Like, I'm just remembering now when I wrote New I Love Nick Chapman, if she used to do Pixie Woo, she's like, I'm sure you know who she is. Yeah. We went to a Charlotte Tilbury launch and we sat together at the back, like naughty schoolgirls, and there was this under eye corrector and it was really bright red. So I thought it was like that old old Hollywood makeup technique, which was put red lipstick under your eyes to get rid of under eye bags. So I'm at this launch and I've patted in bright red stuff under my eyes, and it's for a really dark skin tone, and I picked up the wrong one, and she was crying.
No.
And I'm trying to get rid of it at a Charlotte Tilbury launch that's being filmed. I've got half a red face.
Oh, God. That is it.
And I knew I loved her because the way that she was laughing, she was like trying to help me get it off, but equally she was just crying. Of laughing and crying and hating oneself.
Yeah, and just the silliness, isn't it? Like, there's something so childlike in letting yourself be that silly and free and like, oh God, I know I look stupid, I've got red under my eyes, but actually the feeling of feeling so silly is it's such a childlike way, isn't it? And when you watch kids really laughing and laughing at really silly things and cracking themselves up because, you know, somebody's talked about poo or whatever it is, like, there's such a silliness. And I think that is one of the things I love the most, that like childlike freeing, nothing really matters other than this moment. It doesn't matter what I'm going to have to challenge tomorrow. It doesn't matter what happened yesterday. It doesn't matter if in 2 hours I feel really sad about something. Right now in this moment, I feel free and silly and it's funny. And this, just for me, it's like, it is euphoric, really. I just love it. I love laughing with people, especially people I love and deeply care about. It's something that is so lovely, I think.
So lovely. And it's one of those things as well that sends a chemical reaction throughout the entire body. Yeah. So if you are laughing, your body will turn off its stress responses because it's like,
yeah, it's amazing,
we don't need to be here. We can go on a coffee break. So if ever I'm, and I remember reading Amy Poehler's autobiography, and she talks about the sketch from Saturday Night Live, Debbie Downer, where they go to Disney World.
Yeah.
She said that could cure depression, which is obviously, but honestly, if ever I'm feeling grumpy, I watch that and it makes me cry with laughter. Yeah, Rachel Dratch is so hilarious in it.
So good, so good.
And my body feels completely different 7 minutes later. Yeah. I'm like, I don't feel stressed in the same way as I did before.
Yeah.
Haven't they?
So that's
been
my five.
And they are brilliant. They are fantastic. Thanks. I knew they would be. And I also said when we spoke, you'll definitely be doing a full show because we've got so much that we can discuss about all sorts of things.
Oh, I'd love to. I would absolutely love to. I'll be well up for it whenever you'd like to have me.
Would you do me a kindness and would you tell the listeners where they can find you and about your fabulous podcast?
Yeah. So me and my sister started a podcast in lockdown. It's called Finding the Funny. It's very silly. It's all those things we've just talked about. It's there's nothing highbrow about it. It's really stupid. We just look for the funny observations in life that make us laugh. And you can find us on all of the platforms. It's roughly between 30 and 45 minutes every week. It goes out on a Wednesday. We're so excited about what's to come next. We're just sort of taking it all in. We started with no mics, no editing software. We recorded it on Zoom. I taught myself how to edit it, and then weirdly we got picked up by Warner Brothers and they now produce and edit us, and like it's just been a real roller coaster of like so much stuff that's happened, but it is one of the most life-giving, joy-filled things in my life at the moment. And yeah, she's great, and we take the piss out of each other a lot. We swear quite a lot. It's just stupid. And we do finish every episode with a more serious topic. So we've tackled loads of different things. But on the whole, most of it is just silly laughing, really.
But you had Caroline on the show, didn't you?
We did. She's our best listen yet, you know. She absolutely brought a whole new audience to Finding the Funny. We're forever indebted and grateful to her. And I've loved Caroline. Like, I was there when her blog started, when she started YouTube. I've loved her from afar forever. And the fact that I can sort of now call her a mate is like really weird. And she sent me her book recently and I was like, God, I can't believe Caroline sends me stuff like this. Very odd. But yeah, we've had Ramesh Ranganathan on, we had Ruth Jones on, Fern Cotton's been on, Caroline's been on. We've been really fortunate with the guests that we've had, and there's more exciting guests to come. So, yeah.
Well, imagine my face, and listeners, I told Ruth this when I met her in person. I was like, imagine this. Caroline sends me a text with a link to your podcast saying, Em's not going to lie, this is the best fun I've had on the podcast. I'm like, you bastard.
That is classic Caroline, isn't it? That is classic Caroline.
I will be listening to these ladies then, and I will be making my own conclusions.
Amazing.
And now look, you're on this show. Well, thank you so much for sharing your habits. They've been a dream.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, the links to Finding the Funny, Ruth, and everything will be in the show notes. But thank you so much for coming on the show and joining and sharing your habits.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to that episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I do hope you enjoyed it. I appreciate your time hugely. If you did enjoy it and you never want to miss an episode, then please do hit the subscribe button wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode. It's also where you get the opportunity to leave a 5-star review and a rating for how you feel about the show. And I'd be so grateful if you wouldn't mind leaving one. If you want to get in touch with me, email me at thebeautypodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Or you can DM me on Instagram and Twitter, where I am at Emma Guns. If you fancy chatting to me and thousands of other fellow listeners of the podcast, then click the link to join the Facebook forum. The link to join is in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode. You have to answer a couple of questions, but we cannot wait to see you there. Come over and join the conversation. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you on the next one.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.